Our next speaker is a returning expert. I think Fred Engel last spoke here at the 2004 Broadcasters Clinic. Fred grew up in Michigan and attended Ferris University. He worked at WTTW PBS in Chicago for 27 years. Fred and his team won a Midwest Emmy for the design and construction of WTTW's Digital Broadcast Operations Center. Later, he joined Roscor as their vice president of broadcasting. Next, he became the senior director of technology at KET PBS in Kentucky. In 2016, Fred joined PBS North Carolina, where he is the chief technical officer. In 2017, PBS North Carolina won NAB's Pilot Innovation Challenge for their proposal to use ATSC 3.0 to support their public safety community. Fred is an SBE certified CPBE. He is also the chairperson of Chapter 93 in Durham, Raleigh, North Carolina. He enjoys golfing and biking and is a self-proclaimed space junkie. Fred recently gifted a Lego Saturn V rocket whose 1,900 pieces were assembled by his 9-year-old grandson and the father in one day. Welcome back, Fred.
Thank you, Vicki. Yes, I am a space junkie. I grew up, like many of you, watching the Apollo. I don't remember Mercury. I remember Gemini, and of course the moonshots. And really, it kind of gratified. My oldest son became an aeronautical engineer. Works for Boeing out in Seattle, and he's a space junkie with his 9-year-old son, and we have a great time. It's really great to follow Susie. She and I have spent a lot of time talking and collaborating over the last few years with Next Gen TV. There's a little bit of a story that her boss, Prabhu David, announced at the ATSC conference, I think it was in 2018, the Next Gen Innovation Lab. Whatever title they were going to use for their lab, I was going to use it for our lab. So we had to change our name for our lab. So that was kind of funny. Again, thank you for having me participate in this year's broadcast clinic. Being here does bring back those fond memories when I was here, 2004, I guess, when I was talking about that new concept of high-definition video and multi-channel audio. I mean, this was cool stuff on the deployment, all that. We were doing a lot of production work in Chicago doing HD programming. I lived most of my life in the Midwest, and I can tell you I miss it. I'm glad I was come back here. I always loved the nice cool breezes you'd get after a warm spell here in the Midwest. I can tell you in North Carolina, that doesn't happen. The heat and humidity are relentless. But I will say that I will take the 50-degree January days anytime. So. PBS North Carolina is a statewide public broadcasting network. It is we're headquartered in the Raleigh-Durham area in Research Triangle Park. We are affiliated with the University of North Carolina system. They hold our broadcast licenses. We have the third largest audience in the public broadcasting system. We reach over 13 million people in North Carolina and surrounding states, and we have a presence in 8 designated market areas. We have a transmission network consisting of 12 full-power UHF transmitters and 24 translators. And of course, the numbers you see represent the old analog numbers that we've kept to identify these stations. And connecting that transmission network is a statewide microwave radio system consisting of well over 50 sites. An interesting note is that as far as REPAC was concerned, we had 11 of our 12 sites rechanneled in REPAC. So we were really busy for 3 years, including during the last 18 months during COVID. We finished up early this year on the last of those. And then with the one site that we didn't repack, we were able to get some federal money to upgrade that facility as well. So we have a full new fleet of ATSC3 capable transmission facilities, and also part of the repack, we were able to upgrade all of our 24 translators to OFDM capable systems. This is a very resilient network. We have towers over several towers over 1,000 to 2,000 feet in height. They are designed to withstand the most challenging of weather conditions, including the annual onslaught of hurricanes to North Carolina. And our microwave radio distribution system is very robust as well. PBS North Carolina has a strong relationship with public safety communications officials there. As we share that microwave radio network with the North Carolina Department of Public Safety and the North Carolina State Highway Patrol. We carry the Highway Patrol's two-way backbone two-way radio land mobile radio system on it. And we also host over 40 federal, state, and local emergency communication providers on 20 of our tower sites. And we also provide pool feeds for emergency messages coming from the State Emergency Operations Center. And those are often during hurricane events, but also the last 18 months for weekly COVID updates. We've been very heavily involved with ATSC3. We did our own lab. It's a fully functioning 3.0 system with a TEM encoding, Triveni processing, and a Gates-Eyre exciter that we can take a lot of things we do in, we can test things in-house before we take it to the field. Public media, including public television, is known for delivering quality educational, informational, and entertaining content to our audience over our broadcast television, satellite, cable, and streaming. But what if we could use our broadcast technologies not only to enrich, but to save lives? Not just our tower infrastructure, but our actual television signal. My journey in this started when I moved to North Carolina in 2016, and I quickly connected with public safety communications officials there regarding a very specific problem and whether PBS North Carolina could assist in solving it. So, can I have a show of hands? How many of you have ever called 911? Did you ever wonder what happens after you hang up?
Respond to a first alarm, Florissant Kitchen, 450 Naomi Avenue, Crescent of Bob and Ray. Respond on Tech 10. 4034, 4024, 4125, 4114, 3735, 3720, 4027, 4002, 4102. Respond to a first alarm in Florissant Kitchen at 450 Naomi Avenue, Cross Street of Bob and Ray. All units respond on TAC 10, TAC 10, time it is 1220.
A fire doubles in size every minute. As you saw and heard, there's a lot of information that a dispatcher needs to convey to the responders. And these events, actually, they stack up in a queue. There could be a fire, a car accident, a cardiac event, a cat in a tree. All these get stacked up in a queue and announced one after another. This can greatly increase the amount of time between when the incident is reported and when the first responders are instructed to roll to the emergency. And I'll say it again, a fire will double in size every minute. By the way, that dispatch you heard is an actual dispatch from St. Louis, Missouri area.
Squad 51, injury in a pool.
Tone alerting technology has been around for 50 years. Some of you remember the 1970s program on NBC, Emergency, you just heard the tones, and recognize that. The technology used then is still used today. Tone and voice pagers are extremely reliable and durable means to notify first responders. Although there have been some enhancements in the past few years, most of the pagers on the market today are still voice only and do not have a display. The ones that have a display are generally just for showing what the radio channel that they're on. Recent statistics suggest that at least 70% of the firefighters in the United States are volunteer firefighters and utilize this technology. And most of those firefighters are not located at the station when a call comes, and hence that's the need, continued need for the paging. While there are examples of regional systems that will send paging alerts across multiple counties, most often a paging system is managed at the county level. Each county is unique in its size and shape, but for the most part, the paging system covers the county and perhaps a little bleed over into a neighboring county. There are 100 counties in North Carolina and over 100 paging systems in use. Most are separate and unique. A response agency that neighbors two or more counties may have multiple tones in a pager, so each dispatch center can alert the agency depending on where they are responding. Is there a solution to this problem? Can broadcast television address it? Yes, with data casting, a concept that has been around for two decades now and employed in the current ATSC broadcast standard. But there may be a better way to address this in the near future. Now, every good government slide agency needs to have a slide that says something like this. We're going to transition now to a video that we're going to just transition away from this topic for just a second to a video that we created at PBS North Carolina to better explain to our constituents what Next Gen TV is all about.
The next evolution of television broadcast technology is on the horizon, and it will radically change the way we create, distribute, and consume content. The first TV revolution transformed our world from black and white to color. Then there was analog to digital conversion. And now, digital is evolving to next-gen TV. But what is next-gen TV? First, a quick refresher on current broadcast technology. When TV signals leave our broadcast towers, they travel over the air to your home. Here's where things get interesting. TV signals are a part of a larger communication spectrum that we use in our everyday lives. Within our part of the spectrum, we broadcast four television channels, as well as data streams utilized by state and federal emergency responders. But it gets better. With NextGen TV, our broadcast signal will get a dramatic boost in efficiency and reach. We'll be able to fit more content and services into our spectrum, and have those signals delivered to any screen, not just the black box in your living room. So what does that mean for you? For starters, it means more video options, better video and audio quality, on-demand access, more interactive content, and all of this on any screen, anywhere. Plus, better reception in rural and crowded urban areas. And yes, it's still free for our viewers. For emergency services currently using our spectrum, NextGen TV means getting vital information delivered faster than ever before. In situations where every second counts, that can save lives. NextGen TV enables educational opportunities for students and caregivers to receive personalized lesson plans wherever and whenever they need them. This could completely change the way people without broadband interact with our content. These are just a few ways that NextGen TV can change the way we create, distribute, and consume content. Like any radically new technology, we don't know what other opportunities are waiting to be unlocked. While commercial broadcasters will likely use this technology for targeted advertising, we here at Public Media will continue to be stewards of the public airwaves, ensuring equal access and opportunity for all North Carolinians.
And again, we developed that slide, that video, just to give a better sense for our board of directors, the university folks, and just, you know, the citizens of North Carolina to understand, you know, what the technology might be and what it could do for them. We developed an animation we also use quite a bit to explain and give you a sense of how we broadcast video and data, as well as the differences between ATSC 1 and 3. Remember, ATSC 1 is the current standard introduced in the late 1990s and still used today. In 1.0, we have a TV channel that can deliver 20 megabits of data per second that is represented by the big pipe. And inside that big pipe, we illustrate how it is filled with our four broadcast streams that we present to our viewers. This includes our high-definition program service and three lower-resolution program streams, including our PBS North Carolina-branded kids channel, Rudel. And note that there is a small amount of data transmitted used for emergency communications to fixed receiver locations. With NextGen TV, note first that the pipe gets bigger. Right now, we think that's going to be around 25 megabits per second. And then notice how the program stream pipes got much smaller, and that's due to the improved video encoding technology, HEVC. The result is much more data capacity for public safety, education, and other purposes. NextGen TV also allows us to build multiple pipes within the big pipe, and we have the ability to customize each one. In this case, we are showing the physical layer pipe, or PLP0, is being configured for a very robust delivery of data that will reach a long distance, penetrate buildings, and provide the necessary communications path to the first responder. NextGen TV is based on orthogonal frequency division multiplexing transmission. Unlike the single carrier 8VSB system that is currently in use, OFDM does not suffer from multipath reception issues. The result is far more robust receiving capability, including mobile reception. So, how does this all relate to analog paging? How could NextGen TV solve it? In about a second, the responder knows the responder knows who's going with them, where they're going, what type of incident they're going to respond to, some notes on the call as and what radio channel that they're going to be on, perhaps a screenshot of the area of where they're going to be going, cross streets, et cetera. Now, compare this with the earlier slide, you can see that the greatly reduced amount of time needed to get to the first responders so they can quickly react and roll to the vehicles. It's not a stretch to say that this could save lives. In 2016, PBS North Carolina was approached by the public safety communications officials in North Carolina about a problem, and that was the antiquated analog voice paging system utilized by volunteer firefighters across the United States. Those officials, including the FirstNet single point of contact in North Carolina, his name's Red Grasso, collaborated with us, and in 2017, we wrote a paper describing the problem and the potential solution that ATSC3 could offer. We submitted our efforts to the 2017 NAB Pilot Innovation Challenge Grant competition. The goal of the grant was to explore creative ideas that leverage technological advances in the production, distribution, and display of engaging content. There were 150 national and international submissions for this prestigious award, and PBS North Carolina was the overall winner for our work on the digital paging project. We were delighted when the United States Department of Homeland Security funded a small business innovation research grant opportunity for just this effort, digital paging over public television. This opportunity came from our work in North Carolina, and the grant opportunity narrative was written by my friend Red Grasso and myself. The grant was developed with three phases. The first, to identify one or more small businesses who could prove their ability to address the issue. The second was to select a single business to develop prototypes to prove the concept. And the third phase is to bring the project to market. Device Solutions Incorporated, a Morrisville, North Carolina engineering firm qualifying as a small business, along with the Wireless Research Center of North Carolina, won the Phase One Small Business, I'm going to call it SBIR award, to describe how they would address the challenge. The Phase Two SBIR award was awarded solely to Device Solutions and Wireless Research Center earlier this year to build the prototype system. Now, these slides are provided by Device Solutions. The name of the project, and I meant to write the note, EDPPT. That's Public Television Emergency Deployment. Anyways, I forgot what the acronym was. Device Solutions, through the National Science Foundation I-Corps program, conducted over 100 interviews with parties having direct interest in this effort. Some of their findings included concerns about the high cost of two-way equipment, the lack of secured data paths for the delivery of sensitive data, current paging system coverage limitations, and a lack of redundant, reliable paths. Additional findings included the lack of cellular coverage, the fact that the National Fire Protection Association and the insurance services offices do not currently recognize cellular as an approved delivery network for emergency paging, and that for emergency communications for first responders, and that the analog voice paging can have, and obviously the analog voice paging has significant delays in getting those alerts to the first responders. Computer-aided dispatch, or CAD systems, and public safety answering points, or PSAPs, and PSAPs are 911 centers, in general are not standardized. They're unique. Every county seems to have a different system, and this can make interoperability a big challenge. I'm going to break a little bit from a PowerPoint rule here. I'm going to read a couple of these goals here. So the goal of this project, as with DHS and as Device Solutions put this together, is provide responders and incident commanders with improved pager coverage and capacity, quicker dispatching and messaging details for improved situational awareness, develop a proof of concept for this over ATSC 3. They ask a few questions. Can a 911 center or PSAP customize CAD dispatches from multiple PSAPs be captured, normalized, and exported? And the answer was yes. They developed a proof of concept already to do that. Can the common protocol message that's created from this be sent to an ATSC 3 system for data cast and receipt on a receiver? Yes, they've already done that in our lab. And how do key performance indicators such as dispatch delivery time, transmission reliability, clarity, multi-PSAP capability, and data channel capability compare between traditional voice and tone dispatch systems and the EDPPT system? And the answer is yes, it can be good and much, much better. And can a cost-effective wearable receiver with sufficient battery life be developed with technology available within the next year? They're working on that now, and they will have prototypes probably later this year. Okay, walk through the goals. Okay, with the DHS Phase 2 grant award, Device Solutions identified a number of goals. They include developing a normalization server, and we're going to show that in a second, to bring data from a disparate CAD systems and then prototype receivers that will use ATSC 3 transmission as the backbone. From that, they will be doing data collection, modeling, and testing of the receiver in different environments. One of the key requirements is to develop two paging designs. One is a standalone model, and one integrated to a smartphone. And finally, there will be a demonstration with multiple receivers in collaboration with multiple first responder organizations and from varying jurisdictions in the state. The process for an emergency call starts when someone dials 911. It is received at the PSAP or 911 call center. It is received and information is then passed on to the first responder to their voice pager via VHF radio transmitter. In many cases, the CAD is also funneled into a data normalization server and delivered via cellular to phone applications like PageTrack and Active 911. For the device solutions effort, the paging data from the normalization server makes its way to the ATSC3 broadcast and then on to the new receivers. This slide shows the integration of the companion paging receiver that connects to a cellular phone via Bluetooth communications, providing a redundant path to existing phone applications. Really, the key piece in this whole thing is the data normalization server. Our broadcast does not speed up electrons. We're just the conduit of this information from the data normalization server to the receiver. The data normalization server is where all this information from these CAD computers, when somebody is taking the 911, taking that call, they're typing in the information. As soon as they hit go, that information goes to the normalization server and then gets sent out. And there could be multiple different CAD programs, software coming into that normalization server from different 911 dispatch centers. That's the idea behind it, so that coming out of the normalization server is a common protocol to reach the transmitter and then to the receivers. So I got to quit looking up because then I forgot where I'm at. So here's the review of the benefits. With our high tower, high power broadcast capability, we can leverage existing infrastructure to reach the entire state or localize the alerts to counties around individual towers. As this will be data delivery, it will be nearly instantaneous and it will be encrypted. With NextGen TV, we'll have the capability to create a modulation and an encoding stream for a physical layer pipe optimally tuned to our needs. And we'll see the potential for a number of enhancements beyond just voice to give the first responder information to better prepare them for the event they have been assigned. So, a view again of our statewide network in North Carolina, but this time I'm going to show you where we are already broadcasting in NextGen TV. The small blue circle is the rough coverage area that we have in the Raleigh-Durham area, where we are on a shared transmission system with Capital Broadcasting. And Capital Broadcasting is the parent company for WRAL, the people that did the first ATSC3 broadcast. It is a Class A licensed station, so it's not a lot of power, but it covers about 20-30% of our viewing area. The larger blue circle is our transmission facility near Greenville, North Carolina. Its call letters are WUNK. It operates at 1 million watts ERP at about 1,000 feet in the air. We're not sharing WNK with any other transmission facility, so it is the center of our research and development of the paging project, education, and other experiments. We were able to convert WNK to NextGen TV due to the overlap of six of our surrounding stations. WUNK is located in an area with a relatively flat terrain. It will provide an excellent proving ground to us for our development efforts. And just one other thing, we've thought about what would it take to put in an SFN for that area and what that might look like. This thanks to Gates Air to provide us this model. This is a five-tower SFN. One of the towers, four of the towers are directional. They're out at the edge, and they're pushing energy back into the center. And one of them is omnidirectional. It's the one down to the lower right. That one is near the ocean, so we said, let's put that make that an omnidirectional. We don't have to worry about co-channel interference there because the next stop is Africa. So we figured we're pretty safe there. It's theoretical, but one of the cool things about this, though, this is all based on a 1.5-meter height antenna, which would be a body-worn antenna. So these are the projections for this, the red, the yellow, the green, they're all good. So the next step for us is to take this out in the field and actually measure this. So here's our timeline. We've been on the air for 65 years, but we've really ramped up our efforts since 2016, and we certainly continue to move forward to exploit the capabilities of this new technology. All right, now I'm going to pivot. I've talked a lot about public safety. I'm going to talk briefly about another challenging effort right now. Public broadcasters have been looking at this technology to solve a perplexing problem in our connected age, and that's the lack of connectivity for students at home. The issue has been around for a long time, but COVID-19 brought it to a head. It has been widely published that most states have a significant number of households without adequate, if any, internet service. In North Carolina alone, it's estimated that nearly 200,000 households suffer from this lack of connectivity. There are two primary reasons. One is the simple lack of an internet provider near them. The other is the cost of the internet service. The issue has been greatly magnified this past year due to the pandemic, and although schools were able to secure cellular hotspots to assist in this effort, this is a short-term solution and likely a very expensive long-term solution. The lack of connectivity will be a problem for many years to come. I wrote and published an online white paper that addresses this subject and how NextGen TV might be able to address the issue. There are current pilot efforts to address the connectivity issue utilizing the current broadcast technology 1.0, but many have proven to be challenging due to reception and capacity issues. NextGen TV will be a welcome solution. The public media education platform is an effort of public broadcasters to address the challenges students have with connectivity. PMEP is rooted in Pennsylvania, where they are connected with a very forward-thinking Department of Education, and they have enlisted the support of educators, educational technologists, and key thought leaders. They have graciously invited other PBS state networks and stations to join this effort. Although the platform has been designed to work on both the current broadcast system and NextGen TV, they are determined to move this NextGen TV as quickly as possible. They are keenly aware of our efforts in North Carolina with NextGen TV, and we will be launching with them very soon to be the first NextGen TV effort. The number of students who do not have adequate connectivity nor access to the critical technology is staggering. One of the key features of PMEP will be to extend an internet-like experience to the student. Broadcast is a one-way push of information. However, many of the learning software platforms used by students allow for asynchronous learning, meaning that the student does not need to be in direct contact or communication with their teacher to download and complete assignments. Extending beyond the classroom materials, we in public media have access to a vast library of content and services. Much of that content we already use. A view again of our, wrong page. That content, digital libraries, and educational generated materials will all flow into PMEP customized for each state and local school authority. Educators are using learning management systems to collect and present and track content to individual students. PMEP is being already integrated in the most widely used systems, including Google Classroom and Instructure's Canvas product. The connection to the student will be made by using a portion of our television broadcast signal. Our pilot project will center in Greenville, but could easily expand to other areas of the state. How does this work for the learner? They will receive the data transmission embedded in our broadcast signal via common TV antenna. It will be collected in a gateway education device and delivered wirelessly to the student's device. Work is underway to make sure that the lessons will be formatted for the type of device each student may be using, a computer, a tablet, or a phone. Utilizing devices either provided by the school or perhaps ones they already have, the student will access the content, perform their work, and then respond to the school through various means. Now, we're working with a PMEP technology group that's looking at device features that can report the students' results back to the school by various means. Finally, PMEP will be safe and secure to protect the students. It's not the internet, it's private, it's secure, it's wireless communications from the school to the student. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for putting up with me stumbling a little bit there. I did reference it to white papers. If any of you are interested in those white papers, feel free to email me, and I'll be glad to send them to you.
And we do have time for a few questions, if any. You had to wait till I walked all the way up front, didn't you? This is good for me.
Great presentation, thank you. What do you guys think about for high availability on all the backhaul segments? The interconnections you mentioned were microwave, terrestrial microwave, presumably, you know, co-located on the sticks that you're broadcasting from. Given you're gonna be using this for public safety, 911 dispatch and whatnot, what are your thoughts on, and what are you doing for high availability or protection of those microwave links? Sorry, is there a monitor up there?
I hear you. I'm trying.
Okay.
So on the microwave links, about protection of them?
Say again?
Regarding the microwave links?
Availability, protection, switching, so we, diversity, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we have diversity. You know, we have two dishes, two radios at each site. So we have, you know, we separate the dishes by a good means on the towers to provide some level of, you know, diversity on that. You know, there's a couple parts of the state where we still get a little bit of tropospheric ducting, I guess you'd call it. Rarely do we have issues with any rain fade because we're still up, 7 gig radios, and we're not that far. You know, the distances aren't too bad to worry about that. But yeah, it's not all single link. One thing we are looking at with Next Gen though is we need to get a higher broadband. We have three DS3s that are carried on our microwave system right now. One is carrying our video traffic, one is carrying monitor and control, and one is carrying the State Highway Patrol traffic. And we were able to cram in to our WUNK site the HEVC encoded feed. ATSC3 encoding equipment is back at our network operations center. And we are able to fit it in the microwave, but there's not much room for anything else. So we are looking to put fiber in to all of our sites. So the plan would be that the fiber would be the primary means of communication to the tower sites for Next Gen. The micro would be the secondary, the backup, and it being a dual system. And the third level will still be, frankly, the technology hasn't been invented yet, is off-the-air relay. We do that with ATSC3 now. We have receivers. So we can lose a good portion of our microwave radio system as long as we get our signal to one TV transmission site. We can relay across the state. It degrades a little bit, but we still stay on the air. So that'll give us, with the fiber, it'll give us a third level of redundancy.
With the public media education program, I think it's amazing that it's integrated so soon with Google Classroom and Structures Canvas. Does that send out assignments and lectures or homework?
So the way it's trying to be designed, and I address this in the white paper, is the schools use something called a student information system software. So your student goes to the school, they gets registered, and they put all this information in. A lot of it's obviously confidential information. And the hope is that there would be an understanding whether that student has a real internet connection at their home, or if they don't, they check a box to say that they would receive this information over the Next Gen TV broadcast through that platform. For the teacher, it is hoped that the teacher will see this palette of, you know, 15, 20 students, and the teacher really doesn't know whether the student has an internet connection or not. They're going to be sending, using the learning management system, they're going to be creating and uploading lesson plans and assignments into that. They hit the send button, it gets sent out to all the students. And you can also, with it, you'll be able to, in individual, say, Vicki, I want to just send it just to you, instead of everybody. So that's how that is all being designed to work. We didn't jump into this quickly. We've been talking about it a lot and working with these folks. We want to make sure we do it right, because our fear is that if we, our belief is, under-promise and over-perform, over-deliver, because if we over-promise and we blow it, they'll never come back to us again. So we got to do it right.
Very interesting presentation, Fred. I appreciate it. As far as backups go, if you have a transmitter go off the air and you have these emergency responders counting on that, how does that get handled?
So first you think about all the different things that could go wrong. First is getting the signal there, right? So we talked, if we're going to have microwave, fiber, we're going to have multiple ways to get whatever this emergency information to the transmission site. The next is you think about emergency power. One of my concerns at our places right now is we have a single generator at each site. So my goal is to get dual generators and a facility-wide UPS system so that, we don't go down, only for maintenance. And then at the transmission site, we have a main and auxiliary transmitter, a main and auxiliary antennas. I think, if we can control the power issues and the communication issues to the towers, I think it would be just hopefully not a catastrophic event at the tower site that would prevent that, would keep us from delivering that information. Well, thank you all. I think we're good. Yeah.